on the telephone line from the Boston Globe, our friend Chad Finn. Hello there, Chad.
I am on the telephone line. How are you, Rich?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Well, the news came early yesterday, and it was no big surprise to hear that Jerry Remy had passed away, but at the same time, after all these previous bouts with cancer, I know I had the feeling, not knowing his condition, that there'd be a way he would pull through this as well.
Yeah, I think a lot of people had that same hope. I heard Lou Maloney talking about it today, earlier on WEI down here. But there were also people that were in regular touch with him that had stopped hearing from him. I talked to Dennis Eckersley yesterday, who's, yeah, everybody knows his teammate and friend and broadcast partner. He's last 3 years on the three-man booth and 12 years at Nesson. X said the last time that they texted was after the wild card game when Remy threw out the first pitch to him, and that they really hadn't been in touch since then. And Don Orsillo told me the same thing, that he usually heard from Jerry 3 or 4 times a day and had stopped hearing from him recently. Said Remy always texted him about whatever was going on in the news or the sports world. And they maintained that kind of relationship even after Don went to San Diego. So when things got quiet, people really started to become concerned. So unfortunately, when that came down yesterday, it really wasn't a surprise to a lot of people.
Well, in some ways, it was great that he got to have that one last trip to Fenway and get that love from the fans. And you wonder if he perhaps knew that this might be his last time there, because that was such a wonderful moment.
Yeah, I think he did, just based on conversations, the conversation he had with Eckersley on the mound. And, you know, Eck told him they loved him, and isn't it great how all the fans love you? And Remy mentioned how much the cheers meant to him. And then the next day he had texted Eck and said, I'm really glad it was you that caught that pitch. And, you know, Eck's an incredibly candid guy himself. Jerry could be that way too. And Eck just yesterday, when I spoke to him, said that really felt like Jerry saying goodbye and saying his piece to him. So, It was great that he got that last moment and that people got to tell him how much they appreciated him and loved him, because it's absolutely true. I mean, there are generations of Red Sox fans who grew up just listening to him as a broadcaster. I was a senior in high school when he got that job. I was 8 years old when he was a second baseman, got traded to the Red Sox from the Angels, and was darn close to being the hero of the one-game playoff that year. So, now I'm in my 50s now, and I don't really know Red Sox baseball where Jerry Remy wasn't involved with it. And there are thousands, if not millions, of fans who feel the same way right now.
Well, you had a wonderful piece on him yesterday, and you talked to a lot of the guys he'd worked with. And obviously people loved Jerry Remy because he was one of us. He sounded like a New Englander. As you and others pointed out, he complained about the same things we complained about. But I don't think he would have lasted as long or been successful beyond the humor and beyond that connection if he didn't know baseball and do the work. I think sometimes people forget how hard he worked and how good he had become over the years, and not just analyzing, but predicting what was going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, everybody said that he would have made a great manager. And he was just initially on that track. I mean, after he was forced to retire because of knee injuries in, I think it was spring 1986, he went to minor leagues, coached with the Red Sox Double-A team. Ellis Burks was a prospect coming up there. The Red Sox had a really good farm system. And Ellis Burks to this day swears by how much Jerry Remy helped him in that 1 year as a coach. But Remy just realized that season wasn't for, that life wasn't for him. And his agent at the time, Jerry Capstein, who people remember from about 10 years ago, is the guy with the giant headphones behind home plate. He was his agent, and he connected him with Nesson it was Nesson at the time, because Monty was doing Channel 38 with McDonough. Connected him with Nesson to slide into the booth there, and then with Ned Martin, and you know, Remy, I wrote Remy's obit. I actually wrote it quite a while ago and just updated it through the years, as you do with prominent people. And he remembered the first time that he had to talk over a replay. You know, Ed Martin throws it to him, and it's a play at second, ground ball. And Remy's comment on the replay was, "That's a ground ball to short." So he had a long way to go, and was well aware of it. But he put in the time. I mean, he was always the first guy in the clubhouse. All the beat guys will tell you, the players all knew him, and he would go up there and sit in the broadcast booth and just study the game notes. And by the time the first pitch was thrown, he knew everything he needed to know about not just the Red Sox, because that came pretty naturally to him, but their opponent as well. And that preparation always came through on the broadcast.
We're talking with Chad Finn here on Downtown. I watched some of that broadcast yesterday. Nesson aired that first game he did with Ned Martin back in 1988. And it was a little rough in places, but you could also see the insight and the perspective that he brought to the game. Now, Ned Martin is my all-time favorite play-by-play guy, but Remy really blossomed with Sean McDonough. What was it about that relationship that allowed his true personality to come through?
Sean McDonough was needling him, and it turned into turned into something totally organic. But you know, if you hear McDonough on the Red Sox radio broadcast now, he's good at giving his colleagues a hard time. And he was doing that to Remy, because Remy's natural personality is grouchy, heart of gold New Englander. And who he was on the air was really who he was, but it was him in his best mood. Other times, you know, he might not say anything. Orsello told me yesterday, actually, that when back when they were together, they had to stop bringing, like, corporate people and ad bigwigs to the Red Sox booth, because Remy would just stare a hole through them and not say anything. So eventually Sam Kennedy asked Orsillo, you know, do you want to get down maybe the luxury boxes and talk to them by yourself? So Orsillo had to always trek down there and do it on his own, because Jerry just had no interest. So that was kind of his natural personality. But and McDonough, before Orsillo came along, was needling him about that. And Remy played along, and all of a sudden it turned into not just a thing, but a thing that was really, really profitable for Jerry. And Jerry liked to make a buck. And you had the whole Rem Dog persona that kind of came out of that, which was just originated from McDonough teasing him that's not really how he was at all. Mm. So, McDonough still says to this day, I'm still waiting for my cut from Jerry. Unfortunate that he's never going to get it, but that was always the running joke between them.
Well, I remember, too, from some inside folks at the time, that McDonough also gave him a hard time and told me he needed to stop smoking in the booth, that he didn't want to sit there and inhale that smoke in the middle of a game.
Yeah, they had back and forth about that, and you know, Jerry took him a long time to quit smoking, and that was that Orsillo anecdote I just told you. That was the other part of it. Jerry usually had a butt in his hand, you know, in the back of the booth when those people would show up, and he just wanted his quiet time with his cigarette. If you were in the press box at Fenway back, you know, Remy first got cancer in 2009, he had always smoked up to that point off and on after that, before eventually quitting. You'd always see him outside the booth, you know, in between innings, or whenever he got a chance, he'd sneak out and you know, smoke a cigarette and run back in once he wasn't allowed to do it in the booth anymore. But yeah, McDonough gave him a real, real tough time about that, as he should have. And I don't know if it was a cause of tension or anything, because those guys both had a lot of respect for each other, but Sean definitely let him know where he stood with it.
Boy, what a tough stretch it's been here in New England sports media in the last couple of years on the analyst side, possibly the two biggest ever, with Jerry Remy and Tommy Heinsohn. And then of course, with the recent passing of Bob Neumeier, and not so long ago, your colleague at the Globe, Nick Cafardo.
Yeah, I'm pretty tired of writing about it. from a completely selfish standpoint. Mm. You know, all these people I grew up listening to, and as a media reporter, was fortunate to get to know. You know, one of the things I'm most enjoyed in my career was sitting down with Tommy and just writing like this 3,000-word, basically a Q&A with him over his entire 50-something years with the Celtics. And my whole impetus for doing it was because I wanted to talk to him about it. I just had never talked to him about everything, and I wanted to document that. And my relationship with Jerry was probably a little bit deeper because Jerry is a huge sports fan. He reads everything and listens to everything. And the time he was most pissed off at me, I had to write about what he went through with his father, his son. I had to write that he was still smoking, you know, when he didn't want people to know that, things like that. The time he was most pissed off at me was when my editor had me write a column that it was time for Gil Santos to retire.
Oh.
Jerry thought that was the, he loved him, and he thought that was a really stupid idea. He told me so. And he also said, if you're going to write that about him, the best has ever been, you're going to come for me someday. So, but he just, you know, he would text Shaughnessy still all the time. You know, I loved your notes column on Sunday, things like that. And I would hear from him a little bit less regularly. But, you know, Jerry was a New England sports fan going back to his childhood. You know, he went to those playoff games in 1967, World Series games, and as one of the people rushing the field to get Yaz after the play, after they won the pennant in 67. So his roots in Boston sports aren't just as a player or broadcaster, but he cares about him as much as the people who listen to him all these years.
Well, it's going to be very different without him next year, both watching the games and there in person at Fenway Park. Let's talk about the Patriots briefly here. As you wrote, wow, it seems like old times getting that kind of a win on the road against a good team.
Yeah, what it reminded me of yesterday was, and nobody is comparing specifically this team to 2001. That doesn't happen again. Nobody, I'm certainly not comparing Mac Jones to Tom Brady because that doesn't happen again. But you can make these little nuanced comparisons that remind you of certain things. I think that's fine. And that game yesterday reminded me of the Chargers game in week 5 in 2001 when the Patriots were 1-3. You weren't sure about Brady. You didn't know if this kid was going to be able to fill in for Bledsoe. And they came back from down 26-16 with under 4 minutes left in the game. Jermaine Wiggins, radio personality down here, caught the tying touchdown. They won in overtime and got rolling from there. They only lost twice more the rest of the season, including, you know, all the way through the playoffs. And yesterday's game reminded me of that a lot, most specifically because Mac Jones was not having a good day. He was 8-for-22 at halftime. The Chargers rush was getting to him. But when they needed the big throws, he made the big throws, and he played his best when the game was on the line. And that reminded me of early Tom Brady, where it was the first clue that there might be something special there because when the moment called for it, he stepped up. He didn't shrink from it. And I think it's a good idea to feel really good about this Patriots team right now. There's a reason Bill Belichick was saying we're better than our record. That's something Bill Belichick never says, but I think he really believed it, and we started to see it yesterday that you know, this team has a chance to make some noise the rest of the way.
Yeah, absolutely, and when I look at the schedule, look at the rest of the East, I don't know why they won't be in the conversation for a wild card spot.
Yeah, I mean, San Diego is a good team, I think. I think much better coach this year. Herbert, he's played his two worst games of his career against the Patriots. Mm. Which tells you that Belichick still can get to solve things with a young quarterback that other people don't see. And really talented roster. And they're going to be good. And the Patriots outplayed them, dominated time of possession. Probably should have won by more than they did. And that's encouraging. And a lot of other teams are having trouble. Kansas City, they're no sure thing to beat the Giants tonight.
No.
They've got a lot to figure out. And Patriots are trending the right way and right there in the mix with a lot of other teams. And I think they're going to emerge from that pack and be a playoff team and be somebody nobody wants to play at the very least.
Right. Before we let you go, I have to know, it was a week ago tonight, how was Harry Styles in concert?
Well, I don't know because it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. I dropped my daughter off, and being the crafty veteran sports writer I am, I went over by Fenway because I knew nobody would be around there. there was one person, was a sausage cart still open outside the House of Blues, but pretty much about four other people in the neighborhood. And I went over to Casting Flag and had a meal and watched the Celtics game, and then went back and picked her and her friend up. But when we got back, all of Causeway Street was lined with cars with their hazard lights on, pulled over to the side because of all the dads there picking up their daughters. I've never seen anything like it. And the cops just let it go. There's nothing you could do about it. All the way down the side streets, everybody pulled over on the curbs with their hazards on. So we were all the dads arrived in a swarm for whatever they did for 2 hours.
That's a pro move, though, Chad. I like that. Impressive.
Yeah, my daughter was impressed. She's not impressed with much, but she was impressed with the way I handled that whole situation. I had her meet me at the Bobby Orr statue, which you can't miss.
Well, that's what you have to
10,000 do. 10,000 other dads did as well. So.
Excellent. Well, we're glad to have you back this week. Appreciate it, as always, and we'll check in with you again soon.
You bet, Rich. Good talking to you.
It's Chad Finn of the Boston Globe on Downtown.